pleased to be here and helping to facilitate what I hope is a wonderful dialogue amongst all of us. I feel like I learn so much every time we do one of these article round tables. So I feel a little bit in an odd position to be hosting when I really just absorb so much from all of you. So, as you know, the theme of this week's or of this month's article curation from the EODF is around AI. And I think I was going to give a summary first, but I wonder if we shouldn't do the article thing first, Tanya, and see what resonated with people before I kind of give a little bit of a of like what I'm seeing through the articles and kick off the conversation, see what resonated with people and what they liked the best. So for those of you who are new, we typically start these by polling, like which article resonated with you, which did you find the most useful in your practice, and then sometimes take the other opinion too, like which one really bugged you. So I don't know that we'll get there too.
Caused you some tension.
It caused you some tension. So perhaps we can start there. And while Tanya, you're firing that up, so I come from a little bit of a different background than many of you. I am an attorney and I work particularly with organizational risk, and I do org design work and a lot of technology and process oriented work today, which were in some of these articles as well. But I am not the organizational design gurus that you all are. I kind of come from it from a different lens. So I hope that it ends up being useful.
All right, so we are starting to see one eek ahead. Oh, no, tie. Oh, it just moves constantly. So I'll give folks, we've had the seven of you select which one you found to be most useful. So I'll give it another few seconds and see if we can break the tie. Oh, now we just added another vote on another one and opened it up even more. So.
Okay.
All right, let's, anyone else want to? Going once, not a vote.
Drum roll.
And I have to get that sound effect on my computer so I could do that.
Oh, okay.
And it was a last minute. Four ways didn't get a vote at the beginning for a while. It was the bottom and top ones that were running neck and neck. And then at the end, four
Okay.
ways Gen AI came out strong.
All right. All right. But we do have votes for all the articles. That's kind of cool. Well, so as I was reading the articles and reflecting on them in preparation to support, I think that there are definitely themes and how these interrelate to each other. So I'll just give like a quick rundown of the articles that we have. And I'll actually start with Ethan Mollick's article, which is that AI will evolve into an organizational strategy. It was a pretty quick one. I'm starting with him for a couple of reasons. He is a really great AI thinker. His book, Co-Intelligence, if anybody is wanting to delve more into it, it's approachable and an easy thing to digest. So I highly recommend that. And here he essentially just, puts out the assertion that, we're going to create new forms of value this year. Last year was a little bit about like individual productivity, but this year really incorporating AI into organizational design and as a larger strategy. Some things that I found really interesting that he mentioned was one that he while there is a lot of traction in startup land on this, that the potential for large organizations to leverage AI as an organizational design strategy while being more difficult might actually reap more rewards. I thought that that was really interesting. He noted in kind of just like a one comment that we need to make sure that we're doing this within every organization's specific context. And to me, that is like everything with AI and org design for that matter. So I found that to be really interesting as well. And then he's also started bringing up this concept of, we kind of make assumptions that IT is going to really be helping with AI and an AI adoption and these things, but This is AI behaves more like a human than a technology, really, even though I'm not trying to, it's definitely not human. We can go there if we want to. But so an assumption that IT needs to be at the center of this and that they're the best prompters and that they're the best ones who know where AI is going to be in the organization, I think is much more fundamentally human. And I assume that many of us feel that way as well. So going back up the list, the bring your own AI to work, balancing risks, covered off on what to do with your AI tools and whether we can have people bring their own AI and provide some guidance. I thought it was really provocative from like a company standpoint, since so many took the knee-jerk reaction of like no AI with anything about work. I think that's a big miss and really unrealistic, as the article says as well. So then our leading one, four ways Gen AI can give you a competitive edge. This one I think is so fun to talk about because, you know, it talks about scaling intelligence and, you know, human ingenuity across your organization, curing organizational amnesia. I feel like that's something that we deal with in org design all the time. Like, did we learn nothing from the last time we reorged? Like, let's think about this more. Unleashing human intuition and reinforcing and amplifying a competitive advantage. So while it was a brief article, I do think that there's like a rich, stuff for us to talk about here. And then, I missed the one about revisiting hierarchy, which was a meaty article, and talked again about complexity remaining relevant to org design, no one size fits all, and the age old discussion that we've had in this particular container many times, flatter, hierarchical. What do we do? One size doesn't fit all. Should there be a blend? In what situations? And I find that so interesting because I don't think AI changes any of that, but it is a different tool to examine and whether hierarchical structures are less helpful with AI, or potentially, a flatter organization could be better enabled by AI, and what that means for the roles of middle managers. The approach to the article was interesting as well. And then my personal favorite, ending at the top of EODF's list, is the HBR article, How to Marry Process Management and AI. I am an ISO auditor and a huge fan of quality management systems and getting your processes right and having that be a foundation for organizational design. I mean, that might be fairly obvious being in the compliance context, but I think it's really, really neat to think about it in the context of AI and how we can look at end-to-end integrated processes and leverage AI to better get our arms around and better facilitate the human involvement with our processes. So I'm super jazzed about that article as well. So since I think we had the four things, I think one out in all of that. So maybe we start there. So I will open up the conversation. Maybe someone who preferred that article would like to give us your take on the four things and start there.
I'm sorry, which article are we doing, Selena?
Well, the one that won, the four ways generative AI can give you competitive edge, the INSEAD article, that talked about scaling intelligence, curing organizational amnesia, unleash human intuition, and reinforce and amplify competitive advantage. Did someone choose that as their favorite who wants to speak up? Or did anybody have any particular reactions to that article?
I can go.
Oh, yeah, Marissa.
Yeah. I thought it was interesting under the first point. It was saying that like Gen AI can free up humans for higher impact work. And then I forgot which other article it was, but one of them was talking about how eventually AI is going to get to the point where it's mimicking like human intentionality or something like that. And so I think there's that balance. It's like AI can definitely be a tool to augment and to help us do our work, I just have a, like a, I guess an ethical question of when it does get to that point where it can work as a person or like whatever it is, and just where that balance, where that tipping point is an interesting thing that came to my mind.
A super interesting question. Absolutely. Jim, you have your hand raised.
I got my microphone this time.
Nice.
Yeah, I think the key thing there, which is something that I run into in a lot of conversations, is this idea of logical procedural versus intuitive. Most people don't understand that AI makes intuitive responses to your questions. It doesn't make logical procedural connections. So as an example, in Gemini version 2, which I'm beta testing here, they put the topic, how do I respond to this topic? Do I respond more logically, procedurally, or intuitively to this topic when I'm given? So for example, directly ask the AI, which color tulip do you prefer, blue or green? It will give a response to that, and it will explain how it gave you the response, but then turn around and ask it a question of, can you give me Python code to accept these inputs and produce these outputs? It gives you a logical procedural response to it. And that's something to sort out in understanding how to use AI, which I found a very useful piece to email to about a dozen people that I've had that conversation with recently.
So, Jim, do you find yourself then like telling it that you're looking for a more intuitive or procedural response, depending on the context?
Yes, I go further than that, and I'm familiar with contextual language front end. So I go further to say, when I ask questions in this conversation, I'd like you to always maintain these considerations and rules. And that narrows things down for me. So for example, I have a company that has its purpose statement, value statement, its vision, its current operating strategy, all in a contextual front end, which is about four typewritten pages of content. And you can ask the question, I'd like to propose designing this product for these people. Is that consistent with the decisions that the company's already made? And it will come back and explain why it is or isn't consistent with it. You're targeting a customer that is not on the targeted customer list. You're venturing into a product that requires patents, and we are a low-cost provider to low-cost retailers. Very, very interesting. If you ask that same question without the context, you get a completely different answer.
So, do you feel like, Jim, that it's scaling your intelligence?
It is making me a much smarter question asker and to think about my questions before I ask, especially when I'm doing coding. So the coding that I do, for example, is to read digital books and determine what ought to be changed in the digital books so that it will work better for non-sighted people.
So cool.
So, for example, when it says help, exclamation, 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 my software says to reduce that to a single exclamation point and prefix it with exclaims.
Interesting. Interesting.
So it's it, it I thought there were it was a good article. It was a lot of replay on things, but that one point about logical, procedural versus intuitive, I kept me going for a good deal of thinking afterwards.
That's awesome. That's awesome. William, or do you go by Bill or William?
I go by William.
William.
Thank you
for raising
Selena.
Your hand.
And I love James' perspective. It's like I'm going to Detroit in 2 weeks. I've got a colleague, a 24-year-old gentleman who interfaces with AI naturally, and but also does AI. But he is working on kind of decolonizing AI because it's been done from the masculine perspective, and so he's developing an interface that's feminine. Based on kind of the dynamics of ISIS. To me, the thing about this, and again, I always like stuff from NSEED because they just kind of, they're a little bit more, I don't know, into the weeds, but from a practical perspective, is that I just go back to a simple tool that some of us in this community learned decades ago, and that was the use of self. We have a head, we have a heart, we have a body, and we have a soul. Again, soul to me is about our connection with our inner world and the outer world. It's not religious. And that's a way of using ourselves as an instrument. Most of my work and my play with my AI is left hemisphere. It's mental. And so to me, part of the thing, and in 1957, IBM had an advertisement that said, "We make computers that take the stupid work out so people can do the smart work." So we're maybe achieving that. And I like that one because I was born in 1957. But to me, the piece of the kind of how we're approaching this is, and I think about business process reengineering. I hated business. I mean, I loved it, but I hated business process reengineering because what we ran into was just what was mentioned in these articles, which is the silos and the egos of people when we're trying to actually make business processes work better across those. And AI is providing us with an opportunity to do that from a non, to me, it's kind of the dynamic that we have with authority. It's like, is it more of a peer than a consultant or an expert saying, if you want to do it really well, you do it like this. So I think that there's some great possibilities, but ultimately there's also a great opportunity to let go of a bunch of the left brain, mechanical, repetitive kinds of things. And to me, that piece of then unlocking superhuman capability and amplifying existing advantages and scaling intelligence is going to be a great boon for as long as we let go of our conditioning about how things are, because this is opening us up into a new arena. So I that's kind of my big take on that article.
I love that take, William. And you know, the whole idea around egos and people, you know, turf wars and these kinds of things. I like what you said about AI kind of letting some of that go. And I also think it's like a good justification for us to think differently. That isn't like, you've totally screwed up your process and this has been a hot mess for a long time and everybody knows it, even if you're not going to admit it to yourself, but we're going to optimize with AI and maybe it just can like let people just, yes, let some of that stuff go. I love that so much, William. Anyone else want to reflect on these?
Reflecting on what William said, and you were starting to talk about silos, and then like this article for me, I looking at all these competitive edges, and a lot of it's about, I don't know if you, about some sort of like AI as some type of linking mechanism. You know, so you know, we have org design, you've got your structures, and we all complain about the silos that eventuate in virtually every org. And I feel like AI and through some of these sort of competitive edges is a way to potentially break down silos. It's just the ultimate linking mechanism, whether it's to the past, whether it's to other organizations, other perspectives. It's a way for us all to access it.
I agree with that, Keith. You know, and I think we've talked about this in different groups here. Like the ability of AI to take information from multiple fields and contextualize them together is such a neat way to help bridge. And we've like silos have been a thing forever, since before technology, since before everything. Like, gosh, wouldn't it be neat if we could leverage this technology to help solve that and help have it like help the connective tissue of an organization be better, maybe even let people be more human and less guarded. I think it has brilliant potential. We have to design it that way.
What do
you all think about that from a design perspective? Are you thinking about like how would you start to think about those pieces of it?
So that's always my question, and that's my question for all four articles. I don't have the answer, but I like, that's all fine and good. How do we design for this? Though I think one of the articles said, you know, we design differently with including AI. And I'm like, okay, can you give me some examples? Like, let's talk about how we design an organization that's integrated with AI.
Yeah, that was Ethan Mollick's article. Was like that was one that was most interesting to me, but it was kind of getting at that, like, you know, we've all got it. Like, this is it. It's basically saying, if you're org designer, that's your job now. Work out how, you know, people are going to work with this technology and design for that. Didn't actually give any other hints, as you say, Jardina, and how to do it. But, you know, I guess that's, you know, people like us that profess to be org designers are going to work that out.
Well, some of the, and I know where I'm jumping because I'm like, the articles were all kind of thematically similar, but there was one, I mean, they said like, well, AI can redesign the org on the fly and redesign processes on the fly. And I'm like, okay, but based on what and how, and then what if they're wrong? Like, there's a lot of questions that raises. So I wanted more of that besides just the, it'll be great and it'll do all these things.
And it can do the change management.
Well, but that was pointed out in one of the articles that ultimately what was there was the change management, because again, they can instantaneously design a new process, but how to get the people who are in the systems working on it now to shift, it, you know, is going to create a lot of change management kind of things, and it was a little underplayed. To me, the other thing is that when we look at these articles and we think about it, this is a great opportunity for our community. And to me, I'm going to Ghana in September with the International Organization Development Association, and we're doing AI for good. And so the real question is, and Jardina, this is time of experimentation. Who knows how to do it? But to me, having AI as something that can help us, again, as Selena suggested, part of the biggest challenge that we have is the resistance in the egos of the people who own these processes and all of that. And we in the 90s did a great job of large group process engagement until leaders realized that they weren't going to be making the decisions anymore and kind of pulled back on the large group engagement processes. And so this is another foray to say, it does not matter. Don't get vested in the way it is. Let's look at how we can make it better.
But William, I love your vibe. Marissa.
Yeah, no, I think I was reading some like tweet or something the other day, and I like found it on my phone. It says, sometimes in the process of writing a good enough prompt for ChatGPT, I end up solving my own problem without even needing to submit it. Mm-hmm. And I just thought it was interesting because it's the idea that ChatGPT or any of these AIs, they're not actually like thinking per se, and it's only going to be as smart as the person who is prompting it. And so when it comes to, okay, how do we actually utilize AI to design organizations or any of these other problems, it's still all based in your head. Like, you still have to be the one to understand the processes and the connections between everything. It's just more so using it as a tool to like streamline repetitive, redundant things. But you still definitely have to be the one with it all in your head. So when it comes to process management, you have to understand that flow. You have to understand where those kinks are. And then maybe, I don't know, super long down along the line, maybe it can figure all that stuff out. But there always has to be that part of you that's kind of doing that assessment of like what's right, what's wrong, and when AI does make a mistake, do you have the know-how to be able to be like, no, that's wrong. Like, we're gonna fix it somehow.
Yeah, Marissa, I was listening to a podcast yesterday, just like around the DeepSeek, the Chinese new AI, and like how like that the advance that that's made, and they were saying like where AI is going to get to is like this prompt engineering idea. It's like we all have to be like is actually like it's even going to get intuitive enough to make you a good prompt engineer. So you're asking about something, and then it'll say, "Oh, do you need to like should you be considering this? Do you need to be asking this?" If I was asking that question, I'll help you even create your prompt. Like in so it's like yeah. So we are yeah. It is. I mean, I don't think that's next year, but that's the sort of direction it's going, and with DeepSeek, which will have which requires like that sort of architecture, which seems to require a whole lot less energy. There's going to be less barriers to the development of AI as well. And it's a little bit, that's not very org designy, but
Just a note
that's
on
what we're doing there.
DeepSeek. I think there's only two R's in strawberry.
Really?
That's a trick question for AI systems, is how many R's are there in strawberry? It thinks there are two, and it will give you a logical
Why?
explanation as to how it came up with two R's in strawberry.
Oh, interesting. And is that just DeepSeek, or is that all AI?
No, Gemini and ChatGPT got it right the first time.
No.
The other question that learning educators use, that thing about a let's see, a baseball bat costs a dollar more than a baseball, and combined they cost a dollar 10. How much does the baseball cost?
Yeah.
Yeah, Deep Six, as I call it. It just went away. It fathomed on it for about 30 seconds and then just crashed. Gemini
Interesting.
and ChatGPT both came back immediately with 5 cents.
But the really important thing here is not DeepSeek, but the fact that they've disrupted the marketplace. This is Red Sea versus Blue Sea. It's like, how do we open up possibilities? And the possibility is people have spent billions on ChatGPT and all that stuff, and it was 6 million for this one. And so that innovation is going to make this more ubiquitous and challenge those established titans. I love that.
I love that too. Also, reducing energy footprint is always a fabulous, fabulous endeavor in this energy hungry AI world. So I want to some of the comments that you all made around change management, I think kind of they're tugging me towards the article on revisiting hierarchy. Because I wonder if, the importance of middle managers, that article set out, gave us it had AI create two scenarios. One, middle managers are going to be more important, and one, they're going to be less important. But I couldn't help but think as I was reading those, it's like, well, gosh, if we're going to be going through all of this change and all of this, like, don't we need middle managers to help be stewards for healthy adoption and helping bring employees along and redesigning these processes? So I thought I'd bring that one up in the context of change management and see if anyone has any thoughts on that one.
So,
Thank you. Go.
sorry, go ahead.
Now.
So when we were redesigning the Social Security Administration a few years ago, one of the things that we did in terms of management was we realized that so many of our managers, because unlike companies like 3M, government just has one track. And we realized that we had had a lot of managers who got into those positions because that was the only opportunity for promotion. And what we did is we brought facilitators in and took the managers and had them put them on special projects and those kinds of things. And so to me, as I read this article, I was thinking, the kind of missing the point, which is how effective are folks being in those roles of coordination, communication, and all of that? And to me, it's like kind of like don't redesign from the old, you know, redesign in the present moment and say, what do we need to do? And to me, these exercises that forget the polarity, you know, are we flat or are we big or whatever? Those are polarities. We got to manage the tension between polarities rather than pick them. So to me, it just kind of said, well, that's an interesting way to observe the possibilities, but actually that's a conceptual abstraction from reality. So that was my take.
Yeah, if we, like, I think it's really hard to imagine the world without middle managers and change management. Like when you said that, Selena, I went, oh yeah, of course. Like, how would you do that? But then, like, I go, is it just you're stuck in the problem? Like, you know, maybe there's a CEO chatbot that answers everyone's questions about what's going on in change. You know, there are things that could be built to deal with like 80% of what people deal with when they're going through change that might just be automated. I don't know. And there's also maybe the volume's less. Maybe there's fewer people, you know, experiencing this change that you communicate to as well. But I feel like, you know, that's the thing you're grappling with. It's like, what is the possibility of a new reality? Or maybe the question is, how might we do this without middle management is the question if you've got AI.
Provocative, interesting, I like it.
Hmm.
Jim, you have your hand raised.
Yeah, I'm a member of a network of, I'll just call them business performance consultants. And several of us are retired, but most are still operating. And we looked into what's a different way of doing this organization design stuff? And took on the hierarchy. One of the observations was that the hierarchy is a bad representation of how stuff gets done in organizations. Every high performing HR executive that we worked with and interviewed had some papers in his or her desk or briefcase that described how the company was really organized. Okay, these are all the people that are on the bowling league. These are all the people who sit together in the cafeteria more often than not. These are the usual suspects for every project that everybody in the organization wants to get done. So we said, all right, so that's one thing. The next is, well, what if you redefine the job of the leader, of the middle manager, of the leader? What if you redefined it? And we looked at, from as many perspectives as we could come up with, we looked at what is recruited for and interviewed for when hiring a project manager versus a leader of a department in the organization. And what we found was that the characteristics of the project manager better fit the people who were in the people leadership jobs.
Love that.
And they weren't just project managers, they were context savvy project managers. So they were electrical engineers running part of an engineering lab, but they weren't about developing people, developing talent, developing team cohesion, developing cross-functional operation. And so then we looked back at that and stood back from that and looked at it and said, so what are the implications? And someone barked out over the Zoom meeting, silos. And so what are the least productive silos that we run into when we're doing restructuring in organizations, transformations? And that was the main one was change management is not connected to project management, is not connected to solution design, is not connected to enterprise architecture. Keep going down the list. So we said, so what if we blew it all up? and we redefined the jobs. Well, there are three companies right now, one large financial services company, a large healthcare insurance company, and a large industrial manufacturer, who are running. And I'm going to put this in the I'm going to put this in the chat because nobody's going to remember it. Is what we called it so that nobody would abbreviate it. It was directed, dynamically self-organizing networks of teams with a hierarchical backbone and shared models, methods, tools, behaviors, and explicit decision criteria.
Oh my gosh, yes, please put that in the chat.
So nobody could come up with an acronym. That was part of the definition. But what it boils down to is that essentially everybody reports to somebody, and that's the hierarchy. And it goes all the way to this, to the board of directors being at the top echelon and the frontline team leaders being at the lower end of the hierarchy. The next thing though is that everybody is organized around accomplishing missions. So they have a set of mission objectives to accomplish, and they have a model of the capabilities they require and use to deliver those outcomes.
I love the way that.
So how did we get to those capability models without politics? Is we asked AI. So I'll give you the teaching example is, ask AI, what capabilities do I need to set up and operate successfully a custom cake bakery? And you will get a very clear and maybe 80% accurate model. So that says that you need the hierarchy for certain things, but you don't need the hierarchy for getting work done. You need it for coordinating activities and communicating and reporting and all sorts of administrative things. But don't we always demand that our boss knows more about our job than we do, but they don't interfere with it?
I mean, how often does that happen in IRL?
Yeah. It's there all the time. So I'm going to hand off to Tara.
Yeah, Tara, is it Tara or Tara?
Tara,
hi. Thank you for joining the conversation. Love it.
Yeah. Hi. I just wanted to share my recent observation, and it's more on to Keith's point about the role of middle managers. So recently I read these articles and it got me going. So I looked into AI and I asked, okay, can you give me an image of a company in the next 5-10 years time? So off it goes, and it says, well, the AI powered, just imagine the company called whatever that is, AI powered startup, and it's a global technical company, and they have so it's all AI powered. So the organization structure is, like we said, it's flat. They've got an office, but there's hardly anyone there because AI does all these repetitive tasks. Are you guys there?
We can hear you. Your picture's frozen. Oh, maybe you can't hear us.
Can you hear me?
Back.
Sorry.
That's, we could hear you, Tara. We just couldn't hear, your picture froze, but we could hear you just fine.
Yeah, so that's my internet probably. So the company's got an office, a physical office. There's hardly anyone there. And I ask why. So it comes back, says, well, not because people work remotely, but just because AI took over and does all these repetitive tasks. Okay. Where is HR in it? Well, HR will help with whatever AI solutions offer. AI will analyze the performance results. AI will even build the interview structure, will select and sift the CVs, etc. Okay. And where's the line manager? Where's the middle management? And it comes back and says, well, middle manager can actually read the AI suggested performance reviews, read AI suggested. I'm just sort of in a very short way of describing the responses. Middle manager can review, can read the suggested, what was it? The competency analysis assessment and all this. And I'm thinking, well, if there is a communication, well, because they talk about human AI collaboration. So if I'm an employee and I can ask all these AI, what's the point of the line manager sitting there and just sort of interpreting the responses that AI gave and then conveying it to me? What's the point? So that was my sort of question, and I wanted to share it with you guys.
That is so interesting. I love the thought experiments with AI. Like, I think that the unleash human intuition is so interesting. Like, oh, like what doesn't fit here? And ask it more questions, or my gut's telling me it might be something else. Like, why am I feeling, and I can, it really does help contextualize those things. I love that. I love that thought experiment. Jardina.
This is perfect, Tara, because this my comment actually tacks on exactly to what you're saying. But one of the things in this article they talked about was coaching and giving feedback. And so I have a whole course, I should say, I have a whole course on giving soulful feedback that's launching. But the problem with feedback is it can really improve performance or it can completely destroy performance, right? I mean, if it's not given well, I think maybe it's more, causes more harm than good. So I'm not sure what I think the hypothesis is. If AI gives it, maybe people are less prone to get to take it personally and have it have a negative impact, right? So it's, and it goes back to what you said at the beginning, Selena. It's like all the stuff that we know and we're still not doing because we have done, we've learned how to give feedback, but we still can't do it. So maybe some of those things that we keep repeatedly screwing up are good, really good candidates to go through AI.
Jordana, can I, sorry, can I just step in and just
Yeah, of course.
add a point? I read George Bersin, what do we call it? George Bersin article about the trust. So they did a survey and they asked employees in US especially about the how much do they trust HR more than AI? 64% of employees trusted AI more than HR. That tells you a lot, doesn't it? So, and that goes back to the point where you said on the feedback, and they said they so there was another statistics that I think about 30 something percent of out of 64 said that they would trust more AI given feedback rather than the feedback received from an individual. That's
Oh, that,
shocking.
that's so interesting. Can you put in the chat like where you got that those numbers from? That's so
Yep.
interesting. Thank you.
Sure.
I love that too. Marissa.
I thought one part of this article that was interesting kind of related to that idea of trust. It was saying that like I kind of just wonder what the psychological impacts of all of this could be. And it said, oh, like this could only work in governing digital age exchanges with low transaction hazards. And so it's saying that you can only really use this if you're not going to really be doing stuff that has to do with people, which is interesting. And then also kind of related to the human elementness that I think can kind of be easily lost sometimes. I was reading some article, and I don't know if this is totally true, but it was just some article that I'd stumbled upon. It was about Spotify. And so every year Spotify does this like Spotify Wrapped thing where it gives you insights about your favorite music that you listen to over the past year. And in the past, they would hire all these data engineers to design like the Spotify Wrapped and do like the data storytelling behind it. I think it was initially developed by like some intern or something, and it grew. And then to, I don't know, maybe save money or whatever it was, they decided to replace those data engineer storytelling people with AI. And what happened was that the engagement of Spotify dropped like it dropped like drastically because it didn't have the human element of how do you actually tell data that is engaging toward humans and all these like little nuances that AI just wasn't picking up yet. And so it's interesting to see what may be lost from that human like psychological culture perspective as we kind of like go down this route.
It's so interesting, Marissa. I think that that's such an important thing. Like, think about how social media has impacted our life. Like, gosh, didn't we sleep on that? We have all of these miserable kids, and it's like impacted our society in ways that are just crazy. So, like, it's so I think that, wouldn't it be nice if we can correct that and cure that amnesia and learn a little bit from this and try to lay this down with some intention around how are humans reacting to this? How are they adapting to it and adopting it? It's like such a, it's the jagged edge of socio-technical stuff. And I think that as organizational designers, if our company is making a decision to deploy this technology, I think that a lot of care has to be taken around how do you build that in a way that is going to maybe increase job satisfaction in a way that does not threaten the people who are scared of these things, that is, you know, that feels human, you know, to everybody at the same time. And I think that it's an ethical calling that I hope that organizations will rise to the challenge rather than just focus on shareholder primacy. But, you know, I've beaten my head against that brick wall before. So, so we're getting kind of close to our time. I wonder if anyone who hasn't spoken up or shared yet wants to add some reflections to the conversation, or maybe anyone who wants to suggest going to one of the other articles or something. Just want to open that up. Yeah, Dana.
What I was pondering that came out of many of these conversations is the need for a translation mechanism, right? To take that data, to take that pure response from facts, from logic, or even from intuition or implied, and to make it human and make it accessible. The Spotify example just bubbled that up for me. Because what we did this year at Intel, I pioneered using AI to comb through our employee engagement survey, because we had, in manufacturing alone, we had over 32,000 comments. And I used AI to, you know, a number of different ways to give me a starting point. And then I went in and I read probably about 2,000 comments myself. And then knowing the organization, knowing the leaders, I had to finesse it in a way that made it easier to receive, was more aligned with how people were actually saying things, as opposed to maybe making it so neutral that it lost its impact. So I think we haven't figured out the translation part. And I think there's a danger in going too far one way or the other way, right? Using it strictly and solely, just like the conversation about the middle managers. Yeah, it'd be great to see all that data from performance reviews, from comments, from recognitions, but you know your employee. How do you have that meaningful rapport or meaningful conversation in a way that moves the relationship and the performance forward? So that's what I wanted to add.
Great addition, Dana. Anyone else have any reflections? Well, may we talk about the Harvard Business Review article about process management and AI. I wonder if anyone else wants to maybe go there.
Was it your favorite? Yeah.
Well, I think it's just my background, and I like it when everything has steps that I can kind of compartmentalize and react to. But I just think it's a neat place to start. Because if you're looking at a process, there's like a business objective in mind. It kind of clarifies and puts some scope around things. And looking at that end to end, like, it's a good way, you know, I so many leaders seem to be like, rub some AI on it. We want to say that we're doing AI. And so they, you know, put it anywhere. But like, what's the value? What's the investment? What's the cost? What's the, you know, what friction is developing from this is are questions that I think are lagging far behind the rub some AI on it edict. So the process thing, it's like a nice framing for in my mind that can really help align like your people and your technology. And data, we haven't talked about that a little very much, but if you're using AI in your business processes, like getting the data right around that is so critical. And for anyone who's had to do like technology department and like data strategy design and stuff like that, data is a hot mess at companies too. Like talk about silos, like it's a disaster. Data quality is really low. So there's a lot to think about there. But if you look at it in a term of a process, you can kind of, you know, get your arms around what you're trying to do. And I think it can, the article says it can lead to better decisions and easier tech deployment and, you know, productivity and employee happiness, which are all obviously, I think, things that we would like to see happen. So I don't know, how did it resonate with you all? Did you feel like this article was an interesting way to think about it? Because I have not seen a lot of people talk about process and AI together across, and I am like in it all the time.
So I didn't read this one, but like when reading the others, I was just thinking, like particularly Ethan Mollick one, if you're going to redesign an organization and with an idea that you're marrying up the person and the AI, so there's some sort of shared idea of how the role gets done between those two entities, then you kind of need to start with the process. Right. And so I was thinking like org design skill, like org designers kind of might need to lean more into that process mapping, process design element to get that work done. But don't know whether that makes sense but that was kind of, yeah, that's what came to mind for me around this process management piece.
Yeah, I like that. And even before the process, I feel like the objective, like what problem are you trying to solve? What business objective are you trying to meet? Like we have to ground there in everything. And I does the process lead to the objective with AI? Like, do we need to shift the objective, or do we need to are we messing with the way that we get there? And how does that impact it? What, you know, second and third order consequences does that? I think it's a fascinating exercise. Jardina. Yeah.
It was also my favorite article, Selena. So I'm happy that we got a few minutes to talk about it. Because it's such a huge opportunity. I mean, I'm doing it now, like to go through and assess their 200 processes and figure out like, what's needed and what's not needed and what's extra. And then people are offended because they think that their process is so important. And this goes back to the change management. If AI can just be like, these are all redundant and we can combine them and they're wasteful. Thank you for saying that. And Marissa, this goes with the stuff you're doing. Like, what are the economics of making that change? And we don't have to figure out how to sell it because it's already being sold, right? Like that really shortcuts a lot of that garbage that I think is so important. So I loved that. I went on a little rabbit hole to look in the Pega tool because I think that that's just super cool. And I'd love to see how they do that.
Would too.
Yeah. Maybe that's the next call. Maybe Gina will host a tech talk on that.
Ooh. Yeah, Gina, you for that?
What was that, Selena?
I said, yeah, Gina, are you in for that? I would love to hear that.
Already bugging. We'll see.
Yeah, thank you for the feedback. The planning for next year is underway. So thanks for the suggestion and the feedback. Goes for anybody else. If you have other things that you're interested in, then certainly send them my way.
Which I put her on the spot, but I think it's super cool.
And I, like I said, need the input. Appreciate it.
Yeah, Jim, what you got?
Just an alternative. Some of the more interesting work that I and a couple of colleagues have done is helping organizations to transform themselves. How do we get into what new products, what new business could we be in, given that our current products are flagging in desirability in the marketplace? So you're starting with a problem that's got nothing to do with the solution. The problem is the sales are shrinking. And you've chosen more a strategy that says we're going to grow alternatively. We're not going to go out of business. We're not going to sell ourselves out. We're just going to reinvent ourselves. And that requires a different inquiry. You're not doing a SWOT analysis. You're not doing a process because you don't know what the process is. But you are going to design an organization.
That's fair.
That is going to do something very different. So an industrial, let's say a big industrial corporation that makes those uncomfortable tags that are in the back of your shirts, and they also make road signs. The highway signs that light up when your headlights hit them. They're in the industrial manufacturing business, and now they are being much more profitable in the medical device business. How do you connect those dots? You don't connect them by dissecting a problem. You connect them by exploring opportunities. What we learned from that is that that works just as well for problem solving, because you don't start with a SWOT analysis. You start with an idealized future state where the problem is gone and the organization is more capable of adapting to the next change. So there's a little trick there that, you know, drag out the principles of appreciative inquiry and put those at the front end of your organization design, and you co-design it with the people who are going to live in the new future, and you don't have a change management problem. It goes away all by itself.
Spoken like a true architect, for sure. Okay, we're
engineer. So, engineer, don't you dare.
Okay, we're closing in on time. Marissa, you have some real quick before we scoot?
Sure, I'll say it really quick. I'd kind of just be curious, Selena, to hear your perspective on the legal aspects of all of this, especially like the data integrity piece. You're an attorney, right? It's billions of dollars to like run these AI companies, and you're putting private company data into like ChatGPT, which unless you're doing it on the paid version, any piece of data that you put in is public. It's used to train their model. You're exposing, it opens up all sorts of like liability things. And yeah, so just curious about your thoughts on everything.
Rosa, I am happy to talk to you about it anytime. We need far more than
I know it's a big question
the time we have left. But yes, it is an absolute quagmire. And I think that AI governance is like just the most important thing. And I think org design needs to be a central piece of that inquiry, and not just turn it over to the lawyers, or we're going to end up in an even hotter mess, because we need to look at things very differently than us lawyers typically do. So I'll say that, but yes, risks aplenty, landmines everywhere. And it's really good to be thinking about it. So Tanya, I saw you come on. Are you going, do you have anything that you want to announce to the group before we scoot?
Well, we'll start with thanking you, Selena, for running the conversation. I appreciate you raising your hand and doing that. If you have an interest in doing this in a future month, please let me know sooner than later. We can get you slated to help support this. A handful of you have done this in the past that are here on this call. So it's easy, and it's a supportive group that takes care of you while you're doing the call. And a reminder, a message will be going out tomorrow that our early registration for our 2025 conference is set to expire on February 1st. So if you're going to be joining us in Denver, you'll maybe want to action it sooner than later. And Marissa, I'll put a little plug in, is going to be leading a community conversation on February 12th on the economics of design work. So it sounds like that's going to be an interesting session. And I think we're up to 60 or so registered for that already. So take a look on our website and our event calendar. And that's on February 12th. And then I will stay online for those of you who are first timers and might have any questions. I'm happy to answer anything that has bubbled up in your time here together over the past hour. Other words, I wish you a great rest of your day.
Bye. Thanks everyone for the great conversation.
Bye.
Bye.